Episode 19, Randy Stone.
Pilates has been unbelievable. I mean, it really just became my passion, as you know. But along the way, I discovered a few other modalities that I feel are so complementary and have helped me get deeper into the Pilates.
You're listening to the Taylor Fit Wellness Podcast, where we explore wellness topics from A to Z so that we can take an active approach to improving our quality of life. Okay, here we go. So I am so excited to have Randy Stone with us today. Thank you so much for joining us, Randy. How are you?
Fine, thanks. Thank you so much for having me. It's a pleasure to be here.
I'm so excited for our conversation. I would love it if you would let us know a little bit more about yourself so our listeners can know about you.
Great. Well, my background is that Pilates is a second career for me. I actually have a master's in urban and environmental planning and worked in international development before I hurt my back. And through a kind of convoluted, long exploration, fortuitously found Pilates. It was a game changer for me. I fell in love with it and ultimately decided I wanted to teach it.
It's amazing. Tell us a little bit more about what happened with your injury and how that evolved to your finding Pilates to be such a great resource.
Yeah, so I've had back issues since my, I'd say, early 20s. I have scoliosis and was definitely doing everything wrong in terms of my fitness routine, really working very superficially. So I think that just reinforced the imbalance. My back was bothering me a lot as I was traveling around the world, running workshops and things for my former career. And I kept going to doctors, chiropractors, I went to acupuncturists, physical therapists, and it really wasn't solving the problem for me. I'd have short-term results, but nothing that lasted. I ended up ODing on Advil and ended up in the hospital internally bleeding in the emergency room. And as the emergency room staff was talking about what to do with me, the transfusions and things, I said, can someone please look at my back? Because I've been very frustrated with the orthopedist who I'd been working with, as he told me he was convinced that my back pain and sciatica that was going down both legs was a result of stress and did not think it warranted an MRI. So while in the emergency room, I was living in Washington, D.C. at the time and was fortunate to end up with the head of neurosurgery there. He was a thoughtful man and surgeon. And actually, I don't think I mentioned this to you before, he had some background in Pilates, which I didn't know about at the time. Wow. But it was less than a month before my wedding. I was in the emergency room with my then fiance, my parents, and the doctor, and my mother started crying because she was very concerned, not only about my health, but the fact that I had this wedding in less than a month. And as she mentioned this to the doctor, he said, I have three daughters. I get it. I will cancel all my appointments tomorrow and operate on you so you can at least walk down the aisle for your wedding.
Wow. Oh my gosh.
He gave us a few minutes to think about it. And because I'd already tried so many different modalities and approaches, and it wasn't as though I was starting, this was the first situation, felt pretty good about the idea of having them do a discectomy, whereby they took out the piece of disc that was hitting my sciatic nerve. And the reason it was going down both legs is because it was so low. It was L5-S1, which is where the nerve branches, which is why the original orthopedist was hesitant. That's not as typical. Usually when it's a disc, you have one leg that's bothering you, but I had both.
Tell me the percentage of the slippage of the disc, because I thought that was the kind of an important point.
It was 80% out of place. And wow. The doctor said, you could try bed rest. We could try more physical therapy. I'm pretty confident though, because you've been through so much and because you're in so much pain, that this is the approach you should take. I felt, again, I'd done so much and I was in such excruciating pain. It wasn't to me about the wedding as it was for my mother. It was just about getting my life back.
How long was the experience of the pain?
I'd had pain for quite some time. I mean, I'd been running to the chiropractor for years, but it had gotten worse over the past 6 months. And I think another part of the whole picture was that I was trying to work out to strengthen myself. I just wasn't doing it correctly.
And when you mentioned that what you were doing was more superficial, can you speak a little bit more to that? Like, how was Pilates different as far as being more profound and deep than what you were doing before?
So what I was doing, I was going to a chain gym where I was working out by myself, doing a lot of crunches, never knew there were deeper abdominal muscles. I had a real imbalance. Like, I had a six pack. I don't have one now. But I think the transverse abdominis and the deeper obliques, I don't think I was touching them at all or working on them, which I think was just exacerbating everything. Not to mention there was stress and there was a lot of travel. So it's just a combination of factors that I think I ended up where I was. You and I had, I'd mentioned to you once when we spoke about my first experience with Pilates, and that was profound for me because it was actually my neurosurgeon who recommended I start Pilates. I felt better after the surgery. It was immediate and welcome relief. But about 6 weeks later, sciatica started coming back. And I went to him in tears and said, you know, I'm 29 years old. I've had surgery. I can't even walk a block again. Now what? He said, Pilates. And it turned out that his daughter was a professional dancer and had been using Pilates for injury prevention and treatment and had convinced him to try Pilates instead of having shoulder surgery. And his results were so great that he never had the surgery and he became a huge proponent of Pilates. And it was said early on, this was 1999, where I feel like it hadn't hit the mainstream. So I'm so grateful that I had this doctor. And in hindsight, you know how sometimes challenges in life lead to good things. It was a blessing for me to discover something that helped, not only helped me, but that I fell in love with so much and then can now share with others.
That's amazing. That's so completely amazing. What brought you to work with Romana?
I was in DC. I moved to New York and heard about Sean Gallagher's studio at 74th Street above Fairway and went there for Pilates on the equipment and had another profound experience where I was doing the stomach massage on the reformer and literally started crying tears of joy and relief because I just felt this is what my body needs. This is just so different than anything I've ever done. And it was working me. I felt it in front of my spine so deep, somewhere I'd never accessed before, to my knowledge. And just fell in love with it. So I started taking sessions there twice a week. And then for the holidays, my husband got me a lesson with Romana at Dragos because I'd been hearing all about her and talking all about it. And I remember when I walked into Dragos, I saw Romana on the Cadillac. Doing some of the advanced work with, hanging and doing like pull-ups and candlestick. And here's this woman in her late 70s and my jaw just dropped. And I thought, whatever she's got, I want.
To kind of give the visual, like if anybody's not familiar with the Cadillac and pull-ups on the Cadillac and candlestick, you're basically hanging from this structure, right? Pulling your body up when your body is sort of horizontal to the floor and your feet are in straps, in the strap. And then candlestick is the one where you're completely upside down, right?
Yes. Yeah, so the visual I would use is most people can envision parallel bars, what men do for gymnastics. And so imagine them raised higher off the floor and someone hanging upside down So their legs are in the air and you're using your hands to hold yourself up. You're doing basically, you look like you're in some kind of floating headstand, but you're using your arms to hold you up as well as your core strength. And this woman was in her late 70s as she was doing this. And she was flipping over so her toes would then touch the mat below and flipping back over to come up to a standing position, if you can imagine that.
Now that's inspiration right there. Definitely. Yes.
And I just thought, I have to do this and I have to work with her.
That's amazing. That's amazing. So that that was part of your recovery then. And how did the scoliosis figure into the disc issues?
A lot of people, when you have scoliosis, depending on the degree and the type of curves, but often you have some compression on discs or you're more likely to herniate or slip a disc. So it's not that surprising that I had the issues I had, given that I have the scoliosis and unknowingly I was doing a lot of exercise to probably increase my chances of having trouble.
Right. So the exercises you were doing were potentially making things worse then.
Yeah, it began because they were more superficial and I wasn't working on stabilizers, and the stabilizers in your back and in your front, your core strength will help stabilize the spine, right? So if I wasn't working that, but I was working everything kind of at a shallow level, I was exacerbating any predisposition I would have towards a disc issue.
Wow. It reminds me of this idea of when we're thinking about sort of working the muscles a little bit more superficially versus getting that deep, profound connection for your core. I like to think of the core like in a 360 degree focus, you know, like core 360, like where you're really focusing on all the deep layers, four layers of your abdominals. Rectus abdominis is your eight pack. Transverse yes. abdominis is your inner weight belt, and your oblique abdominals, internal and external abdominal obliques, are on a diagonal and they do the twisting motion. So if you think about Pilates and the variety that's possible, I'm just visualizing some of the exercises on the machines. It's amazing how you can work really every single part of your core.
Yeah. And I remember very well my first session. And I remember the instructor kind of positioning me to even me out. And I felt, this feels so weird. I feel so crooked, but I understand that I'm actually straighter. And my kind of proprioception, my sense of place was very off because I, wow. you know, I am so torqued and uneven. So I trusted her adjustment and started working like that. And over the years, really developed a much better sense of what is more, they say in Pilates, we talk about working like in the square, kind of shoulders lined up, hips lined up, and shoulders and hips lined up with each other. And that's become, through the work, becoming much more of my norm than my exception.
That's
so
amazing.
Yeah, what felt so foreign now feels so right. And I feel when I'm losing that, you know, that's I know amazing. What I need to do to kind of get back into a more symmetrical way of being.
You know, you're reminding me, Randy, I worked with a wonderful teacher named Mukunda Stiles. He's my yoga mentor. And mm-hmm. when he was talking about working with students with scoliosis, really specifically, there were a couple things that came up. Number one, you have to really pay close attention because as a practitioner, when you're working with someone with scoliosis, there's a really deep focus that's necessary to be able to see where a student needs to be that would not be your classic, just easy setup.
Right.
So he would do asymmetrical work in order to put the student back into symmetry.
And that makes perfect sense to me because I know when I've done yoga and I've had people come around and adjust me, no matter what yes. form of yoga, you know, they're breaking from the directions to the general group to yes. correct for me. I think it's a little different in yoga, especially if you're doing, you know, warrior positions and things as opposed to working in Pilates. Pilates is so linear.
Yes.
And so I think you're exactly right. I just think it's kind of in Pilates, you're you're kind of adjusting someone to work more linear, whereas in a yoga position where you're moving out of your center more, right? And you need someone to kind of adjust you almost out of what you would think would be perfect alignment to be in better alignment.
Yeah. Yeah.
So interesting.
Reminds me of simple kind of line from the movie Cars. You know, like probably remember this when your kids were little, right? Like our teenagers are similar in age. So it's fun to kind of think about when they were little. But there's a line from the movie that says, you got to go right to go left.
Yeah, no, exactly. I love that.
Exactly it, right?
Exactly.
Right. So you have to use that intuitive perception of what's happening in a person's body, along with awareness of the musculature, and also balancing out symmetry when there is something that is off, then finding a way to find that balance again. So it's amazing.
Yeah. And cool. I think for me, you know, for me, Pilates was so out of my realm of familiarity. It was so foreign to me in so many ways because I didn't come from a movement background. And so I sometimes think what might have been perceived a little bit as a weakness when I first was studying to be certified and received my certification ends up being a strength in terms of working with people who come to Pilates without that movement background. Wow, you know, I understand when they used to say things to me, soften your ribs. I thought, I have no idea what that means.
Yeah.
So I feel like, especially with people who are beginners or come to Pilates a bit apprehensive, mm-hmm. I can find the language, the adjustments, the little tweaks and the words to help them understand what those who have a stronger movement background might find like easier to come by.
That's such a valuable tool. A lot of professional dancers, Pilates has been their go-to for finding their balance, but it's no longer just that. I mean, I think Pilates is great for everyone. And especially, I mean, we had a few students with scoliosis when I was teaching at one of the studios in the city, and it becomes a necessity to work with your body to keep that balance so you stay out of pain.
Absolutely.
When you have scoliosis, right?
Absolutely.
Yeah. And to have the outside eye to then tell you what center is in real time, because it is off, and to continue to train the muscles to balance out. That's amazing.
And I'll tell you that for me, Pilates has been unbelievable. I mean, it really just became my passion, as you know. And again, it was for my own self-help and also to share with others. But along the way, I discovered a few other modalities that I feel are so complementary and have helped me get deeper into the Pilates. So first it was called the Tupler technique.
Yes.
Developed by an RN who worked in delivery rooms, and her name was Julie Tupler. And so she found when she was working with new mothers, they had no connection with their core, and so many of them had abdominal separations. Diastases is what we say in our kind of more official lingo. And while pregnant, I started working with her and learned so much about how to connect with those deeper core muscles.
Mimi, I just interject, not just pregnant, but pregnant with twins.
Yes. So I was very big when I was pregnant. I had one of my children was 5 pounds, 14 ounces, and the other was 6'10". So I had a lot of baby in me at once, plus the two placentas. I was large. So I also, to be honest, was working with some phenomenal Pilates instructors, trainers of trainers. But they didn't necessarily have the anatomy background to know how to best modify the exercises for me while I was so big.
Okay.
So that was a really interesting lesson. You know, there's this, I think, perception that you can work with people if they're healthy and pregnant, if they've been doing Pilates before their pregnancy. And that's so true. But there's certain things that tend to happen during pregnancy, whether you're having a singleton or twins, multiples. And that was very visible when I was doing a Pilates exercise that people start on the mat and can do also on the equipment called the 100. So when I was doing the 100 while pregnant, I don't remember how pregnant I was, but I was on the reformer and I remember saying to my instructor, why do I have a bulge sticking out in the middle of my stomach? So it's imagine, you know, having like the shape of a watermelon and then having this little like mohawk sticking out in the middle.
Yeah.
And she said, oh, that happens when you're pregnant, just pull in more. And had me continue with 100 with my head up and had me do this every week. Okay. So I ended up with quite a big abdominal separation because...
Oh, no. Did it make it worse? It made it worse.
Yeah, it did. I think there were quite a few things I was doing that was making it worse. So then I found Julie Tupler, who told me I had this crazy 6-finger separation, which is considered pretty significant. And I cried because I thought,
oh my God, you were working so hard, Randy. Oh my God. You worked so hard.
Right.
And this actually, so this is actually a theme I can see here. Like with the back issue, you were doing the work. You were hitting the gym. Mm-hmm. You were regularly doing exercise.
Yeah, that's a good
but
point.
It was not guided in a way that supported you the best. And things got worse. And then also with the pregnancy, you were diligently doing your work. There was a missing piece. And I think what you mentioned, like the obstacle becomes the opportunity. And now
exactly.
Like you've gone through this and now you can share when people are working with disc issues, scoliosis, prenatal, postnatal, what really does help in those situations very specifically because of your experience.
So this absolutely. Is
kind of you can help a lot of people and they won't have to go through what you had to go through.
Absolutely. And that carries over to pelvic floor work. So I delivered my twins vaginally and I started having some stress incontinence issues. I'd cough, I'd pee, I'd sneeze, I'd pee. And thought, well, I was quote unquote Kegeling through my pregnancy.
Yeah.
And wondered what was wrong. And it was interesting because the doctor who delivered my babies mentioned to me in a follow-up visit to the delivery and mentioned one muscle of the pelvic floor and mentioned it was particularly strong. And then I left there thinking, well, that's so weird, you know, that she's mentioning one muscle. Okay. And then I realized I had that kind of eureka moment where I thought, right. When I was trying to connect to my pelvic floor and do these little isolated exercises, the quote unquote Kegels, I was really only connecting with one little quadrant. I never felt any other part. Like I really never connected. And so I was strengthening this one area and promoting more of an imbalance as opposed to really connecting with the whole thing. So that actually, again, another opportunity. I threw myself into seeing, well, how can I get my brain to actually access this other, the other three quadrants, if you're going to divide the pelvic floor into four, and started reading and attending workshops and studying and trying things and ultimately came up with my own, I don't say method, but kind of approach to helping myself and others. I've taught a lot of women since ways to kind of find that area, because think about it. When in your life before you have an issue, do you try and work out your pelvic floor?
Right.
And there's a lot in Pilates that can help, but they're
just to visualize, the pelvic floor for a second. So, like a lot of times when I'm teaching Pilates, I'll put my index fingers and my thumbs together. So I make like a diamond shape, right? So when I'm describing this to students, I'll say the diamond shape group of muscles between your pubic bone, your tailbone, and your sitting bones.
Yes.
So when you're talking about the quadrants, you're saying that you would bisect that diamond in half from top to bottom and from side to side, and one quadrant was stronger?
Yes.
Wow. You're bringing me back here, Randy. So I studied at the Kane School, and one of the things that I loved about working there was the anatomical connection and also the out of the box thinking that you would do for each student. And we had an opportunity to watch the master trainers as they taught. And I learned at one point that you can have an imbalance in the quadrants of your pelvic floor, because I watched one of the master trainers work with a dancer who literally, when they went to do their arabesque, one leg back, right? And as high as you can, usually, that they were having a restriction on one side and not the other. So literally this trainer had this, the dancer take a tennis ball and literally sit on it. So sit on the floor on the tennis ball and get to know the, and get to know the four quadrants of your pelvic floor. And literally when she did that, one quadrant was tighter.
Yeah.
And she could feel that feedback from the ball. And so it's amazing that you're talking about this quadrant awareness. And what did it take to balance it out for you?
So for me, I have found when someone tells you to Kegel, they expect you just to get it. And some doctors or, you know, fitness instructors might say, when you're urinating, stop the flow of urine just once or twice. Don't do it over and over because you can then end up with some kind of bacterial infection, but just to find that. Well, that's one little tiny part of the pelvic floor. And I always say to people, that's kind of your last line of defense. So if you wait till you can just squeeze those superficial muscles, you're missing everything else that's connecting. So to your point, your visualization of kind of putting your pointer fingers together and your thumbs together and this kind of, what shape is this?
Diamond. Yes.
The diamond. The diamond. Yeah. Diamond. Shape. Okay. Yeah. Diamond shape.
This brings a whole new, sorry, I'm getting a little silly here. This is like a whole new idea behind diamonds are a girl's best friend.
Yeah. I love that. So I would say that's a great visual, but I also use the visual of a hammock. So if you intertwine, interlace your fingers and think of the pelvic floor as all these muscles interlaced from your sits bones and from your pubic bone to your tailbone. Yeah. And that then branches up through connective tissue into muscles that are higher up, including your abdominal muscles. So you want to, when you exercise your pelvic floor, you want to do the kind of macro. So you want to kind of work the whole area in that diamond or in that hammock. And for some of us, we need to work at a more micro level to find the connection. So we don't promote an imbalance or reinforce an imbalance that can cause actually instability in the pelvis or, you know, a torqued pelvis, because that kind of imbalance can actually lead to other issues. So sometimes you have the imbalance in the pelvic floor because you already have a torqued pelvis. And sometimes you could cause the pelvis to pivot.
Wow.
Yeah. So I have found that explaining to people, you know, sometimes the best way to start where people have the easiest connection is with their anus, because everyone has tried to prevent themselves from passing gas at once in their life. Right.
Yeah.
So if that's kind of, you're like, okay, yeah, I get that. I can get that in the back. Right.
Yeah.
And then you can think about stopping the flow of urine. So yes, that's superficial, but at least you have two different points.
Yes.
The third point would be, I always tell people the best exercise for your pelvic floor is actually sex, because you have something you can squeeze.
Okay.
And that gives you much better sense of proprioception as opposed to superficial. You can hopefully feel inside, you can squeeze something. So there's the macro and the micro, and you have to pull it all together and find where your imbalances are. And another way to find the imbalances are to try and do your Kegel in different positions. So if you sit upright, if you sit with a tucked pelvis, if you sit with an arched back, if you sit with your right hip heavy and your left hip lifted, of trying different positions can often actually, I'd say, help you find that missing link where you say, ah, I've never felt that before, I got it. And I tell people that's what you want to work more, like where you couldn't find the connection, because you want to make it a more natural connection between your brain and your body. And then you can start doing just more general, again, I use the word Kegels, but pelvic floor exercises.
Yeah.
And the other thing I'd say is you have to be very careful because you can actually hold tension in your pelvic floor and kind of clench it. Yeah. And it's more common than you'd think. So you also need to learn how to release your pelvic floor.
Oh my God, that is so important. Yes.
Yes.
You know, one thing that has been helpful with that idea, I had a student once who had really specific issues with the pelvic floor, and they went to several different specialists to work it out. And that was part of the problem was the clenching. You know, they were a high level activity, tons of spin classes, like super duper focused student. You know, they were driven. But what happened for them, and if you could think of it like this, if any muscle is happy and healthy, it's going to have a balance of strength, stretch, and release. And it's not going to be just contracting, 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 because then what was happening with her was it was just like contracting like randomly, uncontrollably. It was like stressed out, like the muscles there. So, you know, it was a matter of really actively finding relaxation as well.
Absolutely. I find it's very common.
Mm-hmm. And think about prenatal and postnatal. In the prenatal, we talk about Kegel. So I taught prenatal yoga at the Prenatal Yoga Center for many years. And one of the things that was really specifically an important point was there is the Kegels for the strength, but also then there is relaxation.
You know, strong and supple is what we need. Because also, especially if it's prenatal, you need to strengthen those muscles to prevent incontinence, but you also really want to use your core muscles to push and relax the pelvic floor so it opens up to let the baby out. So it's again, it's finding that balance. You think, well, women have been having babies for how many years and all over the world? I think our modern lifestyles are a little bit to blame for some of these imbalances. We sit so much.
Yeah.
And also stress, because there's a very strong connection between using your diaphragm effectively, breathing effectively, and having a really that kind of right balance of a connection with your pelvic floor.
That's so profound, the diaphragm connection. When there's tension being held, the diaphragm can be one of those places where it's really just caught up, right?
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so with regard to working with pregnant students with Pilates, there's got to be a really specific way to work with prenatal students on the machines. How would you work with a pregnant student differently than you would work with someone who is not?
With a pregnant student, just depending upon the student, depending upon their how far they are in the pregnancy, their body awareness, their condition in terms of, you know, some people have complications, some people come into this already with some health challenges. I would modify it sometimes a little bit, sometimes a lot, but there are a few key things that I always do. So if the student is lying down, I do not have them lift their heads up. I always put a block or ball underneath. As the pregnancy continues into the second and third trimester, I limit range of motion quite a bit. And I also have them changing positions quite a bit, so they're not on their back for any period of time.
That's the key, right? So
yeah.
I think, what is it called? Vena cava syndrome, when you lie on your back and then the weight of the baby sits on the blood vessel. That's what you don't want.
Yeah, absolutely.
So alternating the position.
Breathing has become a real focus of mine for prenatal women because, again, if you're for delivery and also to help minimize or prevent the abdominal separation, that's so key.
That's key.
So, you know, it could feel, depending upon the person, it could still be a really substantial workout, but for some people, it might feel a little bit more like a physical therapy session. You know, so you have to come into it with an open mind and knowing that it's good for you, but you might not be working up a sweat. You might not be doing the things that you generally love to do during your Pilates sessions, but yeah. I want you to come out of it being ready to deliver a baby, to recover as efficiently and quickly as possible and be as strong as you can when you have a new baby so that you can best parent this child.
I know, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, wow.
Yeah. I, more recently, because as I age and my interests evolve, I've been focused a bit more on perimenopausal women.
Okay.
And also on the breath has become a big theme of mine, just because perimenopause, one of the things that is so common is anxiety.
Oh, yeah. Definitely.
So I've really tried to incorporate more breathing into my work. Mm-hmm. And I think just realizing women also, they do have atrophy of vaginal muscles. There are a lot of changes that go on with hormones. In addition to, so many women come to me and say, my waist was always my best feature, and now I'm gaining weight at my waist. You know, what is going on? And so just a discussion that this is something that happens often with women as they age, you know, it's hormonal. Yeah. And what can we do for you? You know, managing expectations, keeping you healthy, trying to help you love your body, where you are in life. You know, and also just that anxiety that comes along with everything.
Wow. I think that Pilates being really specifically focused on the core, and perimenopausal women sort of feeling that they have now more around the middle, mm-hmm. it seems like a lot of women would maybe go to Pilates. So you're saying managing expectations, meaning that they might think, okay, if I just do Pilates, I'm going to get my waist back. And how do you feel about that?
I feel, depending upon where they're coming from, right? So if someone mm-hmm. comes to me and says, I am on the Peloton every day, I'm doing this dance class, I'm also doing my yoga, and I'm eating, you know, I'm in the keto diet. Mm-hmm. I don't have that much I can do to help you, shrink your waistline, but I can help you work maybe less obsessively. And also, this is something that's been very interesting for me. I have a thyroid issue. I became hypothyroid a few years ago. Okay. So this is an interesting conversation. So I was working out more and more vigorously, and I still was gaining weight. And it was I finally read a book. Gosh, I wish I could remember the name. It talked about, it was so fascinating to me, how with the thyroid, sometimes your cortisol levels are so high that doing things like spinning, and I was always in the spin class trying to kind of get myself, you know, it was a spin class where they showed you're competing against others. And I'm a competitive person. That's part of what I liked about the class. I'm like, yes, I'm catching up to number three. I'm going to be top 10. But actually for me, in hindsight, that was not a good type of exercise or a good way for me to do the spin class, given my cortisol levels. So I was gaining more and more weight because I was stressing my body out so much with this vigorous exercise.
Yeah.
And as hard as it was for me psychologically, and it seems so counterintuitive, it was better for me to stop the really vigorous exercise for a while and just walk. And that combined with changing my diet, and this is what was very surprising, a lot of foods that are even considered superfoods tend to be very reactive to people with low thyroids. So for instance, raw kale, pine nuts, salmon, sweet potatoes, these were all my mainstays because I was trying to be really healthy. And actually, when I did an elimination diet, it was very interesting as I started adding things in to realize some of these foods for me were not helping my thyroid levels and, in fact, were hurting me, which was all adding to the weight gain. So that, I think, is a really important message to share, because so many women start developing thyroid issues as they get older. Mm-hmm. And so back to your point of a woman coming to me and saying, I want to, you know, shrink my waistline.
Yeah.
I now talk to them about things I've learned, because sometimes these issues are, there's hormones, but there's also, are you over exercising, or are the foods you're eating that you think are so healthy for you actually decreasing your energy and causing weight gain?
Oh my God. Wow.
Yeah. So it's just, you know, it's been, everything's just so surprising as you go on this life journey, right? Yeah. You try and do what's right and you realize, oh, just, you know, it's again to that theme. You mentioned it was a theme with me, and I think you're right.
Yeah.
Just thinking I was doing things right and trying to do things that I thought are good for me or think are good for me, and finding along the way, there's some different approaches that actually are better.
That's so profound, Randy. I'm hearing that. I'm kind of just sensing again, like this theme, and you're not alone. We're also in working with many people teaching fitness and wellness in Pilates and other modalities. The more we can share with others, the better. It's just hitting me like on such a profound level that we try so hard to do the best we can. And sometimes it needs to be something different. And yes, at a certain point, we realize it.
We shift, we evolve depending upon the situation.
Yeah.
Which actually leads me to, you know, I mentioned different modalities. I mentioned what was then the Tupler technique. Now she calls it diastasis rehab, which was helpful to me. But the other, I'd say, again, I use the word modality. The other thing that for me really struck a chord with me, I mean, I've done so many wonderful things, and I do incorporate what I've learned through the Alexandra technique and all different kinds of things. I always, you know, what I kind of take what works for me and try and let it inform my teaching.
Yeah.
But the other thing that I really fell in love with as soon as I tried it was the MELT method, started by Sue Hitzman.
Big fan.
And for me, as someone who came to Pilates without a movement background, I found the MELT method really, there's MELT strength and MELT length. So the length work was just invaluable to me. After having my twins, I started having a hip issue, and it turns out when I pushed my babies out, I ended up with a labral tear on my left hip. Pilates, you know, served me so well, but it was the MELT method that really helped me manage that. And I also found in the process of the MELT method, the MELT strength really helped me deepen my understanding of Pilates and help my teaching of Pilates.
Oh, great.
I felt like it kind of streamlined this, you know, you're trying to get someone to understand the Pilates. I always tell people Pilates is a little bit like a foreign language, and it's not a romance language. So don't expect to fully get it. Even if you're going through the motions of doing, for instance, the beginner mat workout, you might not be feeling it the way I would like you to feel it, or the way that will help you the most, because you can't understand Mandarin at, you know, in 1 hour.
Yeah.
But I do find that putting people on the roller and doing some of the MELT work helps people internalize some of these different ways of moving, so that they can, it informs their Pilates and helps kind of deepen their understanding and then deepen their movement.
Definitely. I love starting on the foam roller. I actually, I was teaching a Pilates class, and the class directly after mine was Sue's MELT class. So Sue would come in and teach her class after I taught my class. And I remember at a certain point taking her class, and the opening warm up, I just thought was so profound on the foam roller. And, you know, just, you know, lying on the foam roller, you know, getting connected to your abdominals, feeling your low back and your low ribs pressing into the foam roll, doing alternate toe touches, or, you know, both legs at the same time with a small range of motion, just to really profoundly feel the connection to your core on that unstable surface.
Yes.
You know, I use that as my opening warm up for, you know, so many times, you know, after learning that from Sue. It's just really amazing to feel that and hopefully help it, have it help our students too.
Yeah. And I think during this time of uncertainty, you know, this COVID era that we're unfortunately in, I do think that as a Pilates instructor, and I, you know, I always say like Pilates is kind of the anchor of my teaching, but I do feel like I offer more than that because I'm certified in some of these other modalities, but also, you know, just I try and inform my teaching all the time. I'm always growing and trying to pass that on to my clients. People need that breathing. I can't stress that enough. And I can't stress the need to slow down the breath, to breathe through the nose, to breathe through the back ribs. And these are not things anyone's ever been taught. And, you know, having had kids, you see when your kids are really, when you have babies, that they're doing that, they're doing everything we are taught to do in our profession, but they kind of lose it along the way.
Yeah.
And so getting people back to that really, really is the most natural way to breathe. But we lose it, like stress and just life.
It's completely amazing. You know, the breath is really such a special indicator of what's happening in the body. I remember having a conversation with a student that was dealing with a specific physical issue, and they had not realized themselves until they did a yogic breathing exercise where there was a count to the breath. You know, you would have literally a metronome. And the metronome would be going and we would say inhale for four, exhale for four, just to kind of find a baseline and awareness. And the breathing in and out on a count of four was just a starting point. But for this student, literally, they found it very difficult to even do a breath for two counts.
Yes.
Because their body was in that much stress.
Yes. And as someone who I had COVID in the spring and was terrified, I mean, this was in early April, New York City, where I kept hearing ambulances and I was so scared to end up in the hospital because it truly felt like it would be a death sentence to end up in the hospital. So I was constantly applying Pilates breathing, other breathing I've learned, doing melt and other, doing yoga classes. I've done enough that I every day, one thing I could do for myself in bed was work on my breath, and it calmed my anxiety. And I think really, you know, I don't have, you know, empirical evidence to show that it kept me from needing to go to the hospital, but I did find, you know, it gave me an awareness of where I stood, that every time I tried to do kind of three short breaths and a deep inhale, I would start coughing and choking. Wow. That I needed to really focus on that. So I needed to modify it and start working up to being able to do that.
Okay.
And I just, you know, intuitively feel that it helped me in a way that, you know, it really kind of saved me. And I also found just being in bed that some of the Tupler exercises where you just engage, pull your navel to your spine and hold and slowly release, and some Pilates stretches, it all helped me get through the virus without significant lung issues, without back pain, neck pain. And I will tell you, pelvic floor work is very important if you contract a deep cough, because if every time you cough, you pee, you're going to have an issue. And I was also very grateful. I mean, I was coughing my head off and I just thought, oh, thank goodness I know how to connect with my pelvic floor. So it was very interesting to see how my, you know, personal experience with all these different modalities and applying it to just managing myself during these 2 weeks of being in bed, I think really helped everything go as good as it could have gone, as well as it could have gone.
It's a great testament to having those skills in your tool bag and really having them handy when you need it. I'm a big fan of building the tool bag for my students. So it's amazing. It's a really good thing. You know what you're reminding me of? We kind of were mentioning that we have a theme happening where like, you know, it's like you try and try, you're working so hard and focused and diligent, and then you learn something and then things shift. And then you realize, oh, okay, this is more profoundly what I need right now. And then, you know, in different scenarios. And, you know, you and I are both parents and we have teenagers. And I used to use this a lot with the idea of parenting, where there's an image that I remember from this movie called The Garden State. Have you seen that movie?
I don't think so.
So there's this movie called The Garden State. And I think of this with regard to a parenting concept where we have to just continue to adjust to meet our kids where they need to be met. And the game is going to change. You know, as soon as you think you have it all figured out, you have to learn the new rules for where we are now. And I used to always use that for my parenting analogy, but I really feel like we can use that with ourselves. So I'll give you the image from the movie. So this is the Garden State, and there is a group of, you know, friends hanging out. And one of their friends who had come into a lot of money is living in this mansion, this huge mansion, and they're just looking for ways to kill time. And so they think it might be fun if they go out on the lawn and start to shoot flaming arrows into the air. And then the visual I have is the aerial view looking down at them. You know, they've just shot a flaming arrow into the air. It's going to come down. And so your visual looking down on them is that they're all looking up and like moving out of the way and dodging where the flaming arrow is going to land. So like that image in my mind with regard to parenting, because you and I are both parents, we have teenagers. And, you know, the deal is when they're little, you think you've got it all figured out, and then they enter into a new phase of their development, and then you got to learn a whole new set of rules. So I've never really thought of this with relationship to ourselves, but just in our conversation, I really feel like that we need to continually be looking out for what do we need in this moment. And it may be very different than it was 6 months ago or 5 years ago. You know, we may have been, you know, in the prenatal phase and the postnatal phase and maybe perimenopause or, you know, whatever phase, or recovering from an injury. Or maybe there's been, you know, a really challenging time, or recovering from COVID. You know, it's like we're going to continually be recalibrating what it is that we need to do in the moment. And, you know, I'm grateful for our conversation, because I had thought of this image and this connection with regard to raising children. But if we're going to be, you know, taking care of our inner child, you know, and taking good care of ourselves, you know, that we need to continually be responsive to where we are in the moment. And that moment is changing continuously.
Absolutely. And I think it's for ourselves and for our clients, because,
yes,
you know, our knowledge as we grow and as we age, you know, as we say, with age comes wisdom, you know, and that is an adage that I think is, there's truth to that, because you just have more life experience and you can help people who are going through it, and you've already been through it, and you have hindsight. You know, they say hindsight's 20/20, and that there is something to that, where you can say, I say to my clients who have a newborn baby and their wrists are killing them because of how they're holding the baby as they breastfeed, you know, to be able to say, oh yeah, that happened to me. Yeah, here's, you know, here are some things that have worked, and here are some things that work for other clients. And if you need to, here are some PTs that are OTs I can recommend to you. And I think, again, there's this whole emotional component. It's giving them what they need physically, but also what they need emotionally, because it's such a big part of what goes on in our bodies, is managing the stress and the anxiety.
Yeah. And kind of, I've seen also sometimes students get stuck on where they used to be in a certain phase, and making peace with where we are and making the best of what we are experience in the moment can be, I think, pretty profound. We can be our best self, you know,
absolutely,
at any given time.
Yes.
You know, it's interesting just, you know, having teenagers and seeing them go through their process. And as the parent, you know, sometimes the teenager is like, they have all the answers. Like the parent can say no, right? a different perspective. I think we're great.
Absolutely.
I think it's actually really great that we have students who appreciate that we have experience and have been through and studied much of this information so intensively. And we're bringing that to the table to help them, you know.
Yeah, I will say, though, that both of my kids are athletes and they both incorporate Pilates into their training. And the reason I was able to convince them to do this, wow, it's not because they have any faith in, you know, my professional knowledge, personal knowledge, and experience. It's because my son broke his leg skiing several years ago. He must have been about 9 years old.
Oh my goodness.
And I thought, oh no, this poor kid, this is a kid who needs to move. How is he going to make it through this? And how are we going to make it through it, having him not move? And then I thought, oh, you know what? He could do Pilates. And so I had one of the instructors who's worked with me for years at my studio. And she teaches kids dance. And I just feel like she's a little younger and she just has a great way with teens.
Perfect.
I said, can you work with him? And she got him on the Cadillac and using springs. And she got him doing the push through bar and got him doing mat work. And it was such a great positive experience.
Wow.
But then my daughter, who's actually not as flexible as my son, and plays basketball, she has had some issues with her ankles, stability, and also just flexibility. You need some flexibility in your hips and in your shoulders to kind of maximize your potential in basketball. And so she started working with the same instructor for that. And both have said they noticed a difference. And we also, the foam roller in my house, because of my, you know, experience with the melt method, the foam roller is probably the most coveted piece of equipment. It's almost like a piece of furniture here, and it gets passed around to prepare for a workout, to, you know, recover from a run, to whatever it is.
Beautiful.
Yeah. And now, you know, as everyone's Zooming and we're just sitting here looking at our devices more and more, open up on that roller is such a incredible feeling and a gift to ourselves. I think it's almost should be like required.
The kind of the general rule of thumb, if you could balance out the position that you're in, say your seated position, to that more open, like open position, to balance it out, like 50-50 would be ideal, right?
Yes, right. So taking breaks and opening up our chests and working on our breath and lengthening our spines. These are all, you know, these are all the tenets of Pilates, and, you know, they can be applied to our lives in different ways without having to go through a full Pilates session in a studio.
Yeah. The little bits, like little breaks in between, is a really important, I think, tool that we all need right now so badly.
Absolutely.
Wow. Oh my goodness. Wow. I feel like there's so much information that we've, been
like
able to cover. I'm excited. I'm so excited we've been able to have this conversation, Randy. Let me ask you a question. If you had to think of maybe one or two tips that our listeners could take with them that they could just apply immediately and maybe have some quick wins, what would you suggest those would be?
I would say focus on your breath, because you can do that anywhere. And you can do it in a more kind of controlled manner, if you will, to start. But once you get the hang of it, you could be working on your breath as you're standing at a stoplight. You could be doing it as you're sitting in the subway or sitting at your desk. And to do that, I mean, I would just take your hands and wrap them around your ribs above your waist, and bring your four fingers to the front and have your thumb really wrap around the back ribs. And I would focus on this kind of 3D breath, inhaling into the Y of the hand and exhaling and narrowing the rib cage, just widening the rib cage on the inhale through the nose and exhale through your mouth. And making a sh sound or h sounds, literally helps bring all the muscles together. So you will be working your core as you work on expanding your breath and doing more, like opening the diaphragm, which is the kind of the bridge between the lungs and the abdominal muscles. And just working on that, noticing your shoulders. A lot of us contract our shoulders as we're trying to breathe. So again, initially, I would almost say do this, you know, somewhere where you're not embarrassed, to count out loud, you know, inhale one and exhale, and then say two and exhale. Counting out loud is going to force you to just help with the breath and help you relax your shoulders. And then you can get to the point where you're doing this without actually having your hands on your ribs. Just notice, and notice how it might be unnatural, and notice your thumbs. Do you feel, can you feel? You can then focus on front and back, your front ribs expanding forward. And can you expand your back ribs into the tips of your thumbs? That tends to be harder for people, but that really helps expand the breath. And this will also help. It's very indirect, but it will help your abdominal muscles to do this. So you're helping deeper breathing. You're helping strengthen your abdominals, and you're going to help with your, just calm yourself by the focus of the breath, the slowing of the breath, and the directing of the breath will help in this, you know, these high anxiety times.
Wow, that's fabulous. I love that. It's really specific. That's awesome.
Yeah.
That's awesome. Let me ask you another question, Randy. If our listeners want to find you, what is the best place for them to find you?
Well, thanks for asking me that, Frances. I would say my website, which is nyc-pilates.com. And from the website, you could find links to Facebook and Instagram, and also to sign up for my newsletter, which is a little bit erratic, but I do send newsletters out, which have links to upcoming workshops on some of these things. I do workshops on the pelvic floor. I do workshops. I have a new one that's how surprising ways Pilates can help you through these tough times, which is really was, you know, what motivated me to do it was my experience with COVID, and how using some of these different tools and applying them while I was sick was helpful. And I think, you know, some of these things that we talk about just in general help boost your immunity. So why not boost your immunity right now? I think the website, nyc-pilates.com. And then if you want to, you know, link from there to social media and or the newsletter, I think that's a great way.
That's awesome. Thank you so much. Oh my gosh. Randy, I'm so excited that we were able to have this conversation. Thank you so much. I would love to be able to speak again in future. Would you be up for that?
I would absolutely, absolutely welcome the opportunity. Thank you. This was a lot of fun. Awesome. I do feel like we could talk forever. I don't know if people want to listen to it, but I do feel like you and I have a lot to talk about. So appreciate it.
Oh, I look forward to speaking more. Definitely. Definitely. Well, gosh, I look forward to us speaking again soon. And I'm grateful we were able to have the conversation. Thank you so much, Randy.
Thank you, Frances. Take care.
Take care. You too. Bye-bye.
Bye.
I hope you enjoyed this conversation as much as I did. Based on what we talked about, I made a special download for you entitled Scoliosis Basics. You can find it on my website at www.taylorfitwellness.com, and also you can click the link in the show notes. I hope this is a helpful tool for you. Take care, have a great day, and we'll see you next time. Thanks. Bye.